Thank you, Shannon. We welcome back Tim Johnson, who has the rather Tim's going to speak on the rather unenviable, that's right, that's the word I was looking for, task of talking about taxes and levies.
Thank you, Chris, and good afternoon, everyone. If you recall yesterday's opening panel session and the sort of brief intervention I gave then, you'll recall that I mentioned support for a sort of global ETS scheme in the medium term. I haven't changed my mind in 24 hours in giving this presentation, but equally I think it would be misleading given the sort of range and thousands of NGOs that you have out there covering both the development side and the environmental side. It would be sort of misleading if we didn't leave you with the impression that there is, you know, support out there, despite what we've heard about the sort of emerging trend towards emissions trading, for the use of levies in a number of different contexts. And to try and just give you a sense of the perceptions behind that and why they believe that's the case. So just a bit of recall. Certainly ICAO isn't new to the topic of levies. And a very brief definition, tax or a charge, how do you distinguish between the two? Well, if you look into ICAO policy, a charge is a levy designed and applied specifically to recover the costs of providing facilities and services, and a tax is a levy that's designed to raise national or local government revenues. And that's effectively the way that the ICAO policy is divided. CAPE itself first looked at these issues as far back as 1998. Working Group 5 and the Forecasting and Economic Support Group to CAPE looked at a number of options for levies in the early days, notably a fuel tax with revenues going to National Treasury, a revenue-neutral aircraft efficiency charge, and an en-route emissions charge with revenues returned to the aviation sector. And, you know, there were a number of key findings that came out of that work. For a fuel tax, relatively straightforward to administer, did raise obviously significant legal issues concerning bilateral agreements and ICAO policies and the possibilities of tankering. And then on the revenue neutral efficiency charges and the en-route emission charges, you know, more consistency with ICAO policy, providing the revenues were used in a certain way, but equally a number of potential problems. And at that stage, CAPE's work going forward tended to focus more on emissions trading and a little bit more on the charges side. And the work on tax wasn't progressed any further. One of the reasons for that is if you look at the FESG report, they found that there was a much higher sort of cost-benefit ratio associated with open trading and charges than there was for the continuation of taxes. So, brief overview of ICAO policy on taxes. It says here that recommends in Australia the reciprocal exemption of all taxes levied on fuel taken on board by aircraft in connection with international air services, a policy implemented in practice through bilateral air service agreements, and it calls on contracting states to the fullest practical extent to reduce or eliminate taxes related to the sale or use of international air transport. And then finally, and this is the last of the policy slides, an extract from the current resolution, Appendix L, that deals with market-based measures, that says in relation to emission-related charges and taxes, it reaffirms the validity of the existing resolution, and that's that levies be in the form of charges rather than taxes, and that funds collected should be applied in the first instance to mitigating the environmental impact of aircraft engines. And then goes on to say it recognises that existing ICAO guidance is not sufficient at present to implement greenhouse gas emission charges internationally, and it gives some scope for regional implementation on operators of those states. And it obviously, at the very end, under number 3, urges states to refrain from unilateral implementation of greenhouse gas emission charges at this time. So given all of that, why do we even have this slot in this colloquium? Well, there is fair to say that outside of this room, and for NGOs that aren't particularly focused on aviation, levies are still viewed as offering some sort of potential. I think one of the reasons for that is, for those that don't see the activity and the effort that's going on, there are two very visible issues surrounding aviation: the size of the industry itself and the fact that it doesn't at the moment actually pay any fuel on international routes, or any duty on fuel on international routes. And I think to the general public and to politicians, that makes it a very visible and easy target. And that focuses the mind, and it makes them look at it. I think the other reason people within the non-governmental world are so interested in it is that actually they want to see the full internalization of costs. And there's partial overlap here with the issue of double counting. Because I, for one, and I think most people would agree that you shouldn't pay at any time the same ton of carbon more than once. But that doesn't mean that you can't use taxes in combination with other measures. So if you take, for example, an emissions trading scheme, a hypothetical one, where all of the permits are distributed free, it doesn't mean that the cost of that carbon is actually somehow benign, is free. There is still a cost that isn't being paid. And there is obviously a case in those situations for having a duplication of measures, albeit that they're not actually overlapping or double counting. And I think it sends, obviously, a price signal to further improve the efficiencies. I think Carl highlighted that as in terms of putting a price on carbon generally, the price has an impact. And it serves to raise awareness. There's something about the words environmental tax or environmental levy when put on your ticket that serves to heighten awareness amongst the consumer, even if it asks the question, why am I paying this? What's it all about? So that's one of the reasons why, you know, many NGOs still think that there is a solution for levies. Some of the advantages, I think they are administratively simple. They can be introduced quickly. And because they don't require the same level of perhaps monitoring and verification that you would with an emissions trading scheme, and perhaps fewer parties involved, you often get a lower transaction cost. And you can often collect it quite simply through existing sales systems. So these are all reasons why there's an argument for levies and they're still on the table. They come in many shapes and forms. Some of them are applied nationally, but I mean, I wanted to focus just on one example in the time that's remaining that has potential application to aviation and that's sort of currently being debated, and just to look at some of the issues and perceptions surrounding that. And that notably comes under the heading of adaptation finance. Many of you will probably be aware that a couple of years ago, the Maldives, on behalf of the least developed countries, submitted a proposal under the UNFCCC discussions to have a levy to raise money for adaptation. They proposed a $6 levy on an economy class ticket, a $62 levy on a premium ticket. And it would have the aim of raising $8 to $10 billion annually, which could be used towards developing countries' needs for adaptation. The levy was proposed at that level because they felt that it would not affect demand significantly. It was a price that the industry could absorb, the consumer could absorb, and therefore it would have minimal impact on the tourism side that so many of them relied upon. And although that didn't really sort of go very far during that meeting, it's neither gone away. And you'll see that it's seen as potentially a valuable, reliable, and equitable source of finance to have a levy on the air transport sector. Potentially either that or through an ETS with full auctioning. Out of Copenhagen came a desire to try and engage more fully with developing countries. And top of that agenda was how developed countries were actually going to find the finance to give to developing countries for adaptation. And the sort of sums that they're being talked about are in the region of $100 billion per annum. There is a high-level advisory group set up under that heading that's currently looking at ways to raise that $100 billion. And although the Maldives proposal isn't specifically on the table, the actual idea of an aviation or a maritime levy is certainly part of those ongoing discussions. So I think the issues, and in closing, that sort of surround that, what's the primary motivation in this case? Because development NGOs don't have a real interest in the aviation sector. They have an interest in getting an overall high-level climate change agreement, and getting developing countries support and buy-in is crucial to delivering that. So promising them the finance is one way that they think they can help to facilitate that. So they are out there advocating levies for international aviation and maritime as one of the ways to raise that finance. From the NGOs that are perhaps more engaged with the aviation sector, it has a few shortcomings. Not least that if you actually have a flat levy on a passenger, there's no incentive to change. There's no incentive to improve efficiency. It's a flat rate no matter what you do. And it's going to have very little impact on emissions. So you may have achieved your overarching goal, but you've done very little to try and reduce emissions within the aviation sector. It's not an aviation emission reduction strategy. And I think for that reason, that is why I said yesterday that our medium-term vision would be to have a global ETS scheme. And indeed, perhaps even to look at perhaps hybrid schemes between some of the emission trading schemes that have been outlined and charging principles. There's a sort of growing sort of forum within the NGO movement that quite likes the idea of a target for the aviation sector, but with a charge on international aviation that would generate a fund. And to the extent to which the aviation industry goes beyond that target, you use that fund to purchase CDM credits to the equivalent amount. And if there is money left after that, if there's a residual amount, then you can still give that to adaptation. So my fear is that if we just have a crude flat levy on passengers, that perhaps we take some away from the momentum for taking action in this room. You know, perhaps you feel the money has been used up and it could have been better spent elsewhere. Equally, if the levy is set high enough, it may actually act as an incentive. It may actually act as an incentive to move to smarter instruments. These questions I can't actually answer without the detail before you, but I think they're the concerns that surround the issue of levies. So in closing, and this is sort of a final remark, you know, as with trading, you can have good schemes and bad schemes, and as with levies, you can have good schemes and bad schemes. If it weren't for the legal obstacles to fuel taxation, I think you would find that there was a growing momentum behind the introduction of fuel taxes as one of the most straightforward ways of tackling this topic. As it is, we're working with the next best thing, which is sort of taxes on passengers. So, as I say, I don't wish to sort of say the development NGOs are wrong and the environmental organisations are right, but there is divided opinion on the role of ETS and the role of levies, and I just think it's important just to have shared that with you today in the brief few minutes I've had. Thank you very much.